A 55-year-long trade embargo still stands, but as U.S.-Cuban relations have warmed in recent years, American businesses have moved into position to seize the day should the ban ever become history. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. With a population the same as the state of Georgia, about 11.3 million people, Cuba boasts of a 100% literacy rate. The island nation's libraries and bookstores are stocked with the political works of Castro and Lenin, of course, but also the poetry of José Martí and the Havana Quartet novels of Leonardo Padura, featuring Inspector Mario Conde. Earlier this month, the second U.S. publishing mission to Cuba visited the annual Havana Book Fair to continue developing relationships with potential trading partners and readers. The welcome, though, proved not as warm as the Caribbean waters that encircle the island nation. Judith Kerr is publisher at Atria Books, a division of Simon & Schuster that she founded in 2002. She traveled to Cuba with the delegation, and she joins me now from New York City. Welcome to Beyond the Book, Judith.
Oh, thank you, Chris. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we look forward to chatting with you. We're curious to learn your impressions and your expectations about a place that, for Americans at least, is often in the news, yet somehow remains enigmatic. Cuban food, Cuban music are familiar, of course, in our cultural diet, though Cuban literature is less so. And, of course, the trade embargo plays a critical role. As I understand, Cuban books, like Cuban cigars, aren't available for sale in the U.S., and likewise, American books are unavailable in Cuba. So for this expedition, books were only displayed at the Havana Book Fair. They're not for sale. Can you tell us about some of the titles that the mission brought to show?
I can, although when I got to the mission, none of the books had actually arrived as yet. And I had sent as one specific title, the German Girl from Armando Correa. But none of the books had actually turned up on the first day of the fair. So the American stand was bare, except for a few things people had carried in their luggage. They did turn up on the Sunday. So it was a mixture of titles that would be interesting to the Spanish reader, although I did not see those books because they were all bare when I got there.
So there's a bit of a logistics problem, and perhaps we should just get right to the point that really matters to that book. You mentioned The German Girl, a debut novel by Armando Correa, who is an exile from Cuba, an author and editor of People magazine en Español. And his novel caught the eye with unfortunate consequences of the Cuban authorities. Why don't you tell us about that?
Okay, I'll just give you a little scene setting for the book fair itself, because it'll give you a context of it. The book fair is held for 2 days. It's open to the public, and it's in the old fort in Havana, which is only open to the public for the book fair once a year. And the rest of the time, no one has access to it. And when we got there, there are sort of lines going right round the block. There are hundreds of thousands of people waiting to get into the book fair. And in the old kind of, it's a very beautiful fort, and they have sort of rotund sort of, which were once kind of facilities or cells, if you like. And each of those is full of books from various countries, mostly South American countries. A lot of the books came in through Mexico, a lot of Spanish language books. So hundreds of thousands of books from publishers all over the world are in each of these avenues, except when I went to the American stand, I had just come from the Canadian stand, and they had some very nice French, they were the featured country. But then when I got to the U.S. stand, there was like a smattering of books that a couple of authors had brought in their luggage. Now, we wanted to, Armando was going to be having a book signing there that day. He's sort of like proud, you know, local boy makes good, comes back to Havana. But there were no books. And so we first thought that all of the books from the United States had some shipping issues and therefore there weren't any. But the next day it became obvious that the only book that wasn't going to make it to the fair was going to actually be The German Girl. And that was quite distressing, although we did find some of the Spanish language editions of it on the Mexican stand, which we then took because we needed them for something else that was going to happen during the rest of that week. And the reason that they did not want this book to be available, because of the content of it, I guess, and a lot of this is supposition on my part, but two other subsequent things happened. One, I was giving a presentation at the at the actual publishing day for this mission, which was separate from the book fair but joined to it. And I was asked to remove any reference to the book and any reference to the author from my slide presentation, which was basically about books in translation and how that deals with copyright in the Spanish language, of which we do a lot. So that was the second part. And then the third part was on Tuesday when we were asked not to, although we did proceed to make a presentation at the local synagogue in Havana, which Armando did do. So it's a complicated story.
It is a very complicated story, and complicated by the subject matter of the novel and by the status of Armando Correa as a Cuban exile or a Cuban living in the United States and in exile from his homeland. And so perhaps we ought to tell people a bit about the book, because the subject is based on history, but I'm sure is fairly controversial for Cuba and for many others. Tell us about that.
The book's called, it's called The German Girl, and it starts, it's three pieces, and it basically begins with 9/11 as the kind of narrative device, but then quickly goes back to Berlin in the late 30s when a lot of people were selling up all their property and trying to flee Germany. And there was a boat called the St. Louis, this is historical fact. And many people, 990, I think, approximately, had bought passage and visas from the Cuban government to go to Havana and start a new life there. And as that boat moves closer towards Havana, it becomes evident that the people are not going to be allowed to get off that boat because of there was some kind of government but basically the person who sold the visas was not in a position to actually honor the visas, simply put. And then when the boat landed there, they tried to have everybody disembark, but they were told they had to pay more, and most people, with the exception of 23 people, had nothing left to give. They had gotten rid of everything to escape. So that boat left Havana and went to the United States, of which Roosevelt wouldn't let any of the refugees off. And the same thing happened in Canada. And the majority of the people, with the exception of 230 that Britain took in, ended up being involved with the Holocaust in various degrees.
Well, a very dismaying story and a very timely one, given the plight of refugees around the world in our own time. And I'm sure for Armando Correa, rather disappointing would be, putting it mildly, a disappointing return to his homeland. Did this incident cast a pall over the mission, would you say?
Well, I would say it caused a sharp relief about, the way things appear and the way things, we tend to kind of think of Havana because we see all those images you described at the beginning, and now it's open and people can go there and have holidays and have the Cuban experience. But, the thing to remember in these places, and the same has been true of other countries, is that their political system is not the same. And there's not necessarily an obvious way of seeing that or even experiencing it normally, except this was that. It's like, okay, there is a big difference. There's nothing you can do. The books are not going to be made available to you. Armando was disappointed. And also people started to get a little nervous about what that means with, for the people who are getting involved with him and the project internally. And then also the ability to sort of move freely back and forth between the two countries. For him particularly.
Right. And Judith Curry, it's a reminder of the power of books in an age when,
yes,
we often sort of dismiss the book as an old artifact, and novels particularly as not having much of an impact in a world where terrorism and refugees and all the headlines dominate. But it's a really important reminder that literature and the conversation that literature allows people to have from country to country and around the world is so important.
And fiction is a very good device because it allows you to sort of be part of the story rather than the observer of the story. And we were able to sort of walk around Havana and see all the pieces, all the places that are actually in the book, which was remarkable and fantastic. But Armando told the story about where he came up with the idea of writing this novel, which he wrote in Spanish, which we translated into English for here. But his grandmother had been there, had been a girl when the ship was sort of, you know, stranded at the port. And she said, you know, Cuba will pay 100 years for what they have done. And that had always stuck with him. And so he uses the device of a young 12-year-old girl, refugee from Germany, to tell this story, and then it becomes a generational one. And of course, it does deal with what happens in Havana from the late 30s right up until now, basically. And they've been through a lot of social and political changes, and which he does discuss in the book. So there may have been that being part of the nervousness of people being having this book readily available.
Right. We are speaking today with Judith Kerr. She is the publisher at Atria Books, a division of Simon & Schuster that she founded, and she traveled just earlier this month to Cuba with the U.S. Publishing Mission. And Judith, moving beyond the unfortunate experience of Armando Correa, what kind of impressions were you left with about the potential for Cuba, and particularly since you are a publisher of literature in Spanish, the potential crossover for Cuban writers and artists to become better known in our own country?
Well, I've had two submissions already, so that's very good. One from a young Cuban writer who's not published in Cuba but is in Spain. So we're looking at that. And then one of the people that was at the presentation who's actually an ambassador for the EU. So being there starts that conversation. Part of the problem is that people are poor in Cuba. They don't really have much disposable income. So the cost of a book is a very large percentage of what their monthly salaries are compared to what the cost of a book is for us compared to our monthly salaries. So there is that. And as you said at the beginning, they're very literate. And people were so refreshing for me to see how many people were actually at the fair and buying those books, which they do at very good prices, and enjoying them as families. You know, they don't have much internet access. There's not much television. There's not much film. So other forms of entertainment haven't encroached on the book space there in the way that they have in everybody else's culture, in Western culture.
Well, clearly great potential for books to continue the process of warming up relations between the U.S. and Cuba. And finally, Judith Kerr, I wonder about the mood among Cubans. It was President Obama who, in the last couple of years, began to normalize relations and to sort of set us on a path that could conceivably lead to the end of the longstanding trade embargo. Now, under the new administration of Donald Trump, things potentially could change, although there's been no news regarding that just yet. But do you have a sense of the mood among Cuban publishers and Cuban authors that perhaps the train may run into a roadblock here?
We're actually at that sort of juncture. It's like it could go, it will change one direction or another. It's going to be more open or more closed. And it's uncertain which direction that's going to go. There seemed to be a lot of enthusiasm with the younger generation. They're very highly educated, but not necessarily worldly educated. And I went to a play that was one of the local playwrights, which was brilliant and very kind of examining what the social mores were. So you can't keep the human spirit down forever. So I think there's a lot of creativity, a lot of music, a lot of kind of questioning coming out of there right now.
Well, Judith Kerr, we really appreciate your candid assessment of the recent U.S. publishing mission to Cuba. Judith Kerr is publisher at Atria Books, a division of Simon & Schuster, and thank you so much for joining us on Beyond the Book.
And thank you very much, Chris, for having me.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center with subsidiaries RightsDirect in the Netherlands and Ixis in the United Kingdom. CCC is a global leader in content workflow, document delivery, text and data mining, and rights licensing technology. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. I'm Christopher Keneally. Join us again soon on Beyond the Book.